Radiance in the Gulag by Njola Sadunate. Part 1. Preparation. Chapter 1. A Catholic Family. My father, Jonas Saldonas, born September 8, 1899, was the youngest of a large family. Five of them reached maturity. Four brothers, Julesus, Silvestris, Casmeris, and Jonas, and a sister, Ursula. They were born and reared in the village of Pusna, district of Gdrakchai, county of Khmerg. He was an intellect, decent and very industrious. Working as a herder for a long time, he prepared himself for and successfully completed the gymnasium final examinations. In 1924, he enrolled in the Department of Agronomy at an agricultural academy, passed all his semester and final examinations, completed a year of practicum, defended his thesis, and in 1930, the jubilee year of Augustus the Great, on September 5th, he received his diploma as a qualified agronomist and remained as a teacher in the same agricultural academy of Daltonuvia. He was religious, but he became especially strong in his faith, so that when he visited Lourdes in France, he could have joyfully died for God. That was our Blessed Mother's gift to Dad. During vacation, my father used to travel extensively with Professor Ruyuskas Rokuzias. They traveled all over Western Europe and visited Africa. He had a great love for the poor, and he used to help them greatly because he had experienced much hardship himself while studying. On May 10th, 1934, he married. My mother, Veronica Rimkutsudunate, was born in early September 1915 into a large family. There were 8 children, among them an orphan cousin who later graduated from medical school. One brother, Ariolzis, died as a young child. Everyone used to say that such children do not live long. The good God took this little angel to himself. Mother was born and reared in the village of Josefava, district of Svedasi, county of Rukiskis. Like Dad, she was intelligent, industrious, and deeply religious. She graduated from the gymnasium of Borsiai, and after marrying, enrolled in the agricultural academy of Dotnova. In the evenings, she liked to walk with my father along the park pathways. Students would hide behind the bushes, trying to hear what the newlyweds were talking about, and they were greatly surprised to hear that the two of them recited the rosary as they walked along. On Friday, March 22, 1935, a son was born whom, on May 12th, in the Roman Catholic Church of Dotnova, they christened Jonas Ariolzis. Later, while expecting me, mother contracted pleurisy. To save mother's life, the physicians advised her to have an abortion. She would not agree, saying, "God alone is in charge of all life, and His will be done." Early on the morning of Friday, July 22, 1939, I came into the world, screaming loudly. I was born in the hospital, which used to be on Donelaitis Street in Kaunas. Mother bore me, like my brother, without pain, and so she used to tell me that as soon as she saw me, she looked at me lovingly and called me fortunate. Now the physicians unanimously agreed that only the birth had saved my mother's life. After my birth, mother was transferred to the sanitarium to recuperate, and Dad brought me home. He raised me with the help of his sister, Ursula, who spoiled me greatly. On October 2nd, in the Catholic Church of Dotnova, Canon Kemesis baptized me Felicita Njole. He was later arrested and, after being tortured, died in a Soviet prison. May he rest in the joy of the Lord. I was already 9 months old and walking when mother returned from the sanitarium. Sometime later, she suffered from exposure to the cold on the way to church and contracted tuberculosis of the bone. This belated diagnosis was made when she slipped a disc. At that time, she was admitted to the hospital where she lay motionless about 3 months. The disc slipped back into place but did not have time to calcify properly. The war broke out, and we had to bring her home from the hospital. In 1941, Dad was informed that he and the family were slated by the Soviet occupiers for Siberia, placing my mother, who could not walk yet, in a wagon with me and my brother, Dad got as far away from home as possible. In this way, the good God saved our family from death. In those days, men being exiled to Siberia used to be separated from their wives and children, and almost all of them died of starvation in the Siberian taiga. So the Soviet occupation authorities sentenced me to death in Siberia the first time, when I was not quite 3 years old. And what for? Just because I had decent parents who loved God and people. After all, every decent person is the greatest enemy of the Soviets, because he will never be enslaved to falsehood. It was difficult for Dad, with a sick wife and two small children, without shelter and without a source of income. A helping hand was extended by His Excellency, the martyr Bishop Vincentas Borisevicus, of sacred memory, who engaged him to teach at the seminary in Telsiai, and arranged a place to live and food for the whole family. I was a very lively temperament, according to my mother, like quicksilver, unable to sit still. Mother, concerned for my future, took me to the cathedral of Telsiai, and commended me to the Blessed Mother, whose special protection I feel to this day, and to whom I am grateful from the depths of my heart for everything. On June 10th, 1945, Jesus came to my undeserving heart for the first time in the Blessed Sacrament. That same day, Bishop Vincentas Borisevicus conferred on me the sacrament of confirmation, while the bishop's sister, Martje, became my confirmation sponsor. Among my childhood impressions of those days, the image of Bishop Borisevicus stands out, bright as that of a saint. He stood out among all others in goodness and simplicity. His sister told me that Bishop Borisevicus prayed to God from his youth for the gift of martyrdom as the greatest grace. His prayer was heard. In 1946, he was arrested and for long months tortured in the cellars of the KGB. When his sister, Martya, would take food and clothing to be handed on to him, they used to give her Bishop Borisevicus's torn and blood-soaked clothing. On a few occasions, the clothing was soaked with sewage and, in laundering, gave off a very foul odor. More than once, they kept Bishop Vincentas in a punishment cell full of sewage, and when he lost consciousness, they would pull him out. All those articles of clothing I saw with my own eyes. New linen bore great blood stains and was torn to ribbons. So terribly did they torture Bishop Vincentas in their desire to force him to consent to falsehood. They were unable to do so. He remained faithful to God and the truth. For this, on August 26, 1946, he was libeled by the KGB in the Supreme Court of Vilnius and condemned to death. His sister, Malkia, touched him as they took him past her. There was no flesh, just skin and bones, but from his tortured and emaciated face radiated peace and joy, and he smiled at his sister. During his trial, he uttered just one sentence. Before God and man, I am innocent. A student who had been in the death cell with the bishop and had miraculously survived told me that Bishop Vincentas strengthened them all spiritually, explaining the truths of religion, giving conferences, and spending most of the time in recollected prayer on his knees. Whenever he received a small packet of food, he immediately divided it among everybody, leaving nothing for himself. When they would take him out for interrogation, apparently they were always expecting to break his faithfulness to the truth, he would leave as if on his way to his death, blessing everyone. More than once they threw him back in the cell unconscious. They would place steel plates on either side of his head and press them together until he lost consciousness, but they were unable to enslave the powerful spirit of the bishop to falsehood. Then, once, his blessing was final. They took him from the cell and never brought him back. His Excellency, Bishop Vincentas Borisevicus, and Father Franciscus Gutsiatstis were shot at the foot of Gediminas Hill in Vilnius. In the yard of the barracks standing beyond the Vilna River, early in the morning they brought them in a covered truck, lifted them both out because they could not stand, jammed them back to back like shocks of wheat, and killed them with pistol shots to the temple. When they slumped to the ground, they were kicked over on their faces, their hands tied with rope behind their backs, were freed when the ropes were cut with a knife. With a few more kicks, the bodies of the martyrs were pushed into a grave which had been dug right there. The soldiers immediately filled the grave and covered it over with yard dirt, so that no sign would remain of the burial. The date and place of the execution was leaked by a KGB agent who had purposely worked there so that he might help the prisoners as much as possible, to a relative of his, who, like all Lithuanians of goodwill, held the bishop in high esteem. Early that morning she went up to Gediminas Hill and hid in the shrubbery. She saw everything herself and later told me, "It was so terrible that for a long time I could not sleep. I was so shocked. I can still see it all. I would never go again to see it." In the words of our martyr bishop, Mesilovas Renius, "Happy are those who have not bowed to falsehood. They live forever. They reinforce our ranks. All you holy martyrs of Lithuania, pray for us." We lived in Telšiai until the end of 1945, and when the KGB began looking for Dad, we'd immediately left Telšiai in secret for Anyaksiai. There, a good friend of Dad's, Antanas Stamas, was employed as director of the experimental station at Elmaninkai. He took Dad on as a senior research assistant. We went to live with Mother's aunt in Anyaksiai, and later obtained an apartment in the suburbs in Joniedzanos. Around us was a stand of pine, and nearby, the river Svantagi. Dad used to go to work on a bicycle, and in winter, on horseback. His place of employment was 5 kilometers away. We experienced much hardship and even starvation. Dad used to earn in a month just enough to buy 3 kilograms of butter. There was a shortage of bread. Sometime later, some good people gave Dad a cow to support himself. In the garden, he used to grow potatoes and vegetables. We got back on our feet, but whenever we heard automobile motors roaring early in the morning, we would all run out into the grain fields to hide, lest they take us off to Siberia. This is how most Lithuanians lived, as if on the rim of a volcano. At our next-door neighbors was the headquarters of the communist irregulars. Words fail me in describing their cruelty. Here they used to torture partisans and throw their terribly mutilated corpses out into the yard, next to the well from which we used to draw water. Later, these corpses used to lie for weeks in the town square of Anyaksiai. They were not allowed to be buried. They used to kill people without compunction. Often, if peasants just visited their neighbors, the irregulars used to consider them partisans and shoot them. The word irregular, strybas, became a curse word, so repelled were people by their deeds. All Lithuanians of goodwill loved the partisans, sympathized with them, and helped them as much as they could. Partisans used to come also to the Elmaninkai experimental station, always polite, pleasant, and cheerful. Upon departure, they would leave the director a receipt for the government grain, etc., which they had taken, so that he might have something to present to the irregulars. The infuriated irregulars used to guard the Elmaninkai experimental station for weeks, and when they lost patience and pulled out, the partisans would come back and again leave a list of what they had taken from the government granary. At that time, there was not one Soviet turncoat at the experimental station, not a single party member. Soviet officials used to call the Elmaninkai experimental station the Bandits' Station. Director Antanas Stamas had to exhibit much tact in order to placate the Soviet officials and others who would come looking for trouble. Most often it was possible to calm them down by entertaining them and getting them drunk. Director Stamas saved many people. May God reward him with eternal happiness.